Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. Chris Dedman is the Assistant Humanist Chaplain at Harvard University and the Values in Action Coordinator for the Humanist Community at Harvard. Anyone reading his new book, Faithiest, How an Atheist Found Common Ground with the Religious, will soon learn Chris has done a lot in a relatively short period of time. Chris, it's really great to have you back on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Welton. It's always a pleasure.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the book. I well remember sitting in this studio having a discussion with you and hearing for the first time that you were writing the book. I want to begin by asking you to talk about the word faithiest.
I was first introduced to the word faithiest when I went to an atheist meeting and was actually called a faithiest. And I became aware that this is one of a number of terms that exist among atheists that is used to describe a certain approach to engaging with the religious, I suppose, one that's seen as perhaps overly accommodating of people of faith and of the views that they hold. After that experience, I decided that I wanted to explore what the state of engagement between religious communities and the non-religious was. And as I did, I noticed that there wasn't much happening in some cases, and in others it seemed to be not all that productive. So I was interested in learning more about how we could perhaps find better ways as atheists and, also invite the religious to similarly reach out and try to build more understanding around deeply polarizing differences.
The subtitle is How an Atheist Found Common Ground with the Religious. So talk a little, if you will, about the book itself and what led you to write it.
Sure. The subtitle is sort of risks sounding like a bit of an overstatement because, you can't sort of lump all of the religious together. Mm-hmm. And I also certainly would never claim that I have found common ground with all religious people. Mm-hmm. But it is told in a narrative format. It is a memoir because I wanted to describe and take the reader through the experiences that I've had that have led me to the belief that it is not only sort of a valuable project to try to find common ground and understanding in spite of religious and non-religious differences, but that it's actually in a world in which religion is increasingly a polarizing force in the public square, it is, essential that that project be undertaken. So in the book, I describe my experiences growing up in a non-religious household and then around the age of 11 becoming a born-again Christian. And I try to walk the reader through that experience and then into the experiences in my adulthood that sort of led me out of religion and then back into being interested in constructive conversations with people of faith.
Chris, why do you even want to bring these seemingly opposing groups together? And I don't mean that really as negatively as it sounds, but I think it is a good question. I mean, you and I both have had experiences in the religious community that make us wonder if there aren't some people with whom we could never relate.
Sure.
And here you are working on bridging two communities that have been really way apart.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is, and again, the reason why I wrote this book as a memoir is part of it is really deeply connected to my personal experiences, experiences of being excluded in religious spaces and in atheist spaces because of the views that I hold and because of who I am as a person. And I came to recognize that some of the experiences that I had of being sort of othered or outgrouped in religious circles and in atheist circles were not the results necessarily of the religious beliefs of the community or the philosophies of the atheist group that I was a part of, but that perhaps it was a deeper symptom of a very natural human tribalistic inclinations to sort of group people into categories and then to shun people who don't belong to the categories that you identify with or mm-hmm. sympathize with. As I began to reflect on my journey over the years, I recognized some what I thought were striking parallels between the experiences I've had in religious circles and in atheist circles. And I felt that the times when I had been outgrouped, the consequences of that kind of tribalism were similar. And in that sense, you know, I felt that it was important to look at the problem fairly for what it was, instead of saying, you know, the times when I had sort of very deeply negative experiences in religious circles was simply a problem of religion, and therefore I should, you know, reject religious communities and sort of advocate for the end of religion. Instead, I've come to see those experiences as connected to deeper human problems with relating to those that we've decided are unlike us. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I'm interested in doing that kind of bridge building work.
Oh, that's well said. I'm wondering, as you were writing, thinking of your past, were you seeing faces, remembering conversations that you really were responding to?
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, I took a year and a half to write it, and then an additional nearly a year to sort of edit it and sit with it, in part because I really wanted to try and take the time to sit in the experiences that I've had and then to try to translate them for people, you know, who haven't had those experiences or you know, people who mm-hmm. haven't lived my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I went through and reflected on those experiences, I was surprised by how intimate they still felt. For example, I tried to immerse myself again in the experience of being an evangelical fundamentalist Christian and being closeted as a queer person mm-hmm. and how conflicted and distraught I felt. And, you know, this was a long time ago, and I think before I started writing the book, I felt these are experiences that are so distant that it almost feels as if they happened to another person. But mm-hmm. I was astonished by how quickly all of those feelings and emotions came back as soon mm-hmm. as I made the decision to sort of intentionally try to immerse myself in those memories again. I was holding so many different communities and individuals in my mind as I wrote this, and my hope is that the book will be able to connect with a wide group of people, because I think it's connected to so many different kinds of experiences, even though ultimately it's just an account of my own experiences. I think that, you know, because I had so many different communities and people in mind as I was writing it, that there's the potential that, you know, people will be able to connect with one point of the book or another, even if their experiences diverge really greatly from mine.
Chris, when you move from memory to vision, what's ahead of us, what do you see as the greatest obstacles to the kind of reconciling cooperative work that you want to do?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the fact that our world is so connected now and that people can really easily access and connect with people and ideas that they never would have been able to in previous years, on the one hand, that is a great advantage that we have, but it's also, I think, made public discourse and even interpersonal discourse very challenging, especially around contentious issues like religious identity or atheism. It's very easy for people to stick within their own groups and to sort of talk past one another, and we all sort of have this illusion that we are in these greater conversations, but we're actually just talking with people who are reinforcing our own views, and we're shouting at people who we see as not in agreement with us and with the views that we hold. So it's going to be very challenging mm-hmm. moving forward to find civil but also honest and robust ways of discussing these issues that can be so contentious, because we now have forums for communicating about them that allow people to dehumanize one another. And that's kind of the idea of the significance of having interfaith dialogue, is it gives you an opportunity to bring together a group of people who hold very different views and gives them the opportunity to share their stories and experiences and values with one another in a way that humanizes that diversity. And unfortunately, with the internet and with the media, it's very easy for people to just kind of talk past one another and, mm-hmm. and talk to the group that they already agree with.
Are you filled with hope? Or are you filled with pessimism?
Well, most days I'm filled with hope, and I think that this probably comes through in the book, but I recognize that I am an individual who is influenced by my environment in a number of ways. And so if I'm connecting with people who are, you know, very sort of excited about the idea of building pluralism and understanding, that really inspires me. But I have decided to take on an issue that is very divisive and very difficult And that means that, you know, I have come up against a fair amount of very sort of vitriolic, very sort of dehumanizing and personal disagreements. And that definitely takes its toll on a person.
Yes.
But I do find that at the end of the day, I feel more optimistic than anything else because I continue to see the dividends of this work. It would be one thing if I was sort of just talking about ideals and aspirations, and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice if people could get along in spite of their religious differences, or if religious people and atheists could just, you know, build those kinds of relationships of understanding, wouldn't that be a nice idea? But the fact of the matter is, I see it happen every day. I work with people not only at Harvard, but all across the country and around the world, who are living out those principles, who are putting that into practice. And whenever I'm traveling to go do a speaking engagement or a workshop or an interfaith dialogue or an interfaith community service project, you know, I go with the idea that, you know, I'm going into a situation where I'm going to be trying to put these ideas into practice and to, you know, see how it plays out in the real world. And if I wasn't connected to the work as closely as I am, and I was just sort of talking about the ideas, it might be easier for me to feel discouraged or to feel pessimistic. But because I see it in action so often, and because based on what I've seen, I know that it is not only true, but it's easier than we think it is, that fills me with optimism for the work and motivation to do it.
Chris Dedman is the Assistant Humanist Chaplain at Harvard University and the Values in Action Coordinator for the Humanist Community at Harvard. His new book, out on November 6th, Election Day, is titled Faithiest: How an Atheist Found Common Ground with the Religious. It's an insightful and inspiring book, and I'm really glad you wrote it. Chris, thanks so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you, as always.